This is Elementary Greek Grammar, Lesson 4. Masculine and neuter nouns of the second declension. Vocabulary list. I will read the left-hand column first and then the right-hand column. Anthropos, apostolos, artos, doron, thanatos, hieron, notice the rough breathing, hieron, kai, kurios in the right column, lithos, namos, oikos, achlos, huios. Just a few comments. The neuter nouns, of course, are the ones with the ta, if you recall from the previous lesson. That means that doron and hieron are neuter. You cannot tell from the endings because neuter nouns and other declensions have different endings. You must learn these as neuter nouns because of the article ta. Kai is a conjunction meaning and. It's the most common word in the New Testament. It can also be translated also or even, and those are both adverbs. We'll be discussing more about the use of conjunctions and so on and adverbs later, but we gave the definitions back in lesson 2. Declension 4.2, or 4.2, declension. A declension is a set of endings for a noun or an adjective. It's just the set of endings. Like verbs, nouns have stems. The stem of the noun is found by removing the ending from the vocabulary form in the list above. For example, anthropos has the ending os, which makes the stem anthrope. There are three declensions, sets of endings, the first, the second, and the third declensions. We studied the second first because it is simplest, most straightforward, and it contains more nouns than the other two declensions. Do not think of a declension as a set of endings for a particular gender of noun. The second declension, the one that we're studying now, contains both masculine and neuter nouns. The first declension contains both feminine and masculine nouns, though there are many more feminine than masculine nouns in that declension. The third declension has masculine, feminine, and neuter nouns, and those are quite distinct. The second declension, the one that we're studying now, is sometimes referred to as the Omicron stem declension because the most common letter in its ending is the letter Omicron. Now, we need to discuss case in paragraph 4.3. In English, first, we only have really two cases, the subjective and the objective cases. Now, the word case in language refers to the way a noun is used in a sentence. In English, we recognize only three cases. They are the subjective and the objective case. And the possessive, I said before, the subjective and the objective are the only cases. There is the possessive case. Possessive case nouns are usually inflected with an apostrophe by the followed by the letter S. However, nouns are not inflected for objective case, while personal pronouns are inflected. So here's a difference in English than in other languages. We do not inflect nouns for the objective case in English. Personal pronouns we do inflect, and we'll study that when we look at personal pronouns. Therefore, the subjective case and the objective case look identical in spelling for any noun in English. Now, that's obvious to us who speak English. Unusual for other languages. The only way to tell which case is to discover how it's used in a sentence. Hence, the word man could either be the subjective or used as the subject of the sentence, or objective, or the objective case, used as the object of the verb or the object of a preposition. There are a couple of examples here. First of all, notice the word order, because in English, subjects and objects are often determined by word order. In example one, the man hit the ball. Man is in the subjective case, while ball is in the objective case. The ball was white. The word ball is now the subject and is spelled the same way as when it was an object. You can't tell the difference by spelling. In English, it's usually the word order. When we change from subjective to objective case in English, there is no change in spelling. Other languages, this is not true. But in English, it is always, which has confused a lot of people when they study English. from other languages. Another example, the woman went to the store. Woman is in the subjective case, while store is in the objective case. In English, all objects of prepositions, in this case the verb of the preposition to, are in the objective case. The possessive case. In English, we do slightly inflect the possessive case with nouns. As noted, the most common way to do so is to add an apostrophe plus the letter S to a noun. The woman's purse fell on the floor, for example. Woman's, with the apostrophe S, is possessive case telling whose purse it is. In English, possessive personal pronouns are more fully inflected, and so I've given you here in this chart the various forms of the pronoun. The first column gives you the first, second, and third pronoun, person pronouns. I changes to my in the possessive case, and the plural of I is our or ours. The second person is you, personal pronoun. The possessive is your or yours, and the possessive plural is the same. It's your or yours. Third person pronouns, the masculine he is his in the possessive, and the plural possessive is their or theirs. The third person feminine, she, changes to her or hers for the possessive, and their or theirs for the possessive plural, the same as he and it. Third person it, neuter, there's only one possessive, its. Again, the plural is their or theirs. Now, the plural in English case nouns, then, is not always inflected with a apostrophe S. That's the regular plural inflection. You simply add an S, or sometimes, as you may know, an ES to the end of the word. But there are some words that are inflected differently. Let's look at first the normal inflection. Singular nouns here, I have a list of them. Dog becomes dogs, tree becomes trees, hour becomes hours, house becomes houses, horse becomes horses. But there are a large number of what we call irregular plurals in English, and these have to be learned individually. Usually the word simply changes a form of the spelling. Sometimes this is major change. Sometimes, however, there's no spelling change at all. The singular and the plural are identical. Look at the following nouns. The singular noun for man is men. We change the middle letter. Foot becomes feet. Shelf becomes shelves. Fish stays fish and pork stays pork. You don't say fishes usually, or porks either. Except with fish, when you're talking about various variety of fish, you can say fishes. So if you're talking about the fishes, shark versus a trout, for instance, you might use the word fishes. But when you're talking about more than one of the same kind, it's simply fish. Now, why does English do that? Well, it's an idiom of the language, and that's an important word. We'll be talking more about idiom as we go through the lessons. In Greek, cases are differently done. They're fully inflected. The Greek case system is fully inflected. Greek has several case forms, both singular and plural. Unlike English, which regularly adds S or ES to form all plurals, each case in Greek has a set of plural endings. And by the way, I must mention at this time, Greek is not the only language that does this. Many languages do it. German, for instance, has a fully inflected noun system, very similar to the Greek one. Latin as well, and so on. So there are many languages that do this. Now, pardon me. The first form, I'm going to call it form one, has only one case associated with it. The nominative case functions the same way as the subjective case does in English. Now, I don't know why this is that English does not use nominative. It only uses the word subjective in grammars that I've ever studied. I would like to keep it consistent, but it simply isn't. Any noun used as a subject of a sentence will be in form 1 in Greek. In addition, any noun following a state of being verb will also be in the form 1. The nominative case is considered the case of designation. This is the grammatical way in which this has been presented for many years. Nominative case nouns do not share their forms with any other cases. So if you see this particular spelling, anthropos, for instance, with the os ending, that's always going to be nominative case, and nothing else is possible for that. So look at the first example here. Ha anthropos graphi. The man writes. There, anthropos is the subject of the verb. Right beneath it, ha kurios blepai. The Lord sees. Kurios is always nominative. It can be nothing else but nominative. Look at the second column. The example, ego I me anthropos. I am a man. Ego means I me is a word we haven't seen yet. That means am. And anthropos is a man. Second example, ha logos agenita anthropos. We haven't studied agenita yet, but we'll look at that. That means became. The word became man. Both, and notice anthropos follows the state of being verb in both I me and agenita, and so it's spelled in the nominative form. It's very important that we remember that. So the nominative case is used both as the subject and the complement following a state of being verb. Now, Greek also has what are called oblique cases. Forms 2, 3, 4, and 5 are forms of oblique cases. Any case that is not nominative is called an oblique case. Simply means a case that is on the side of the main one, which is considered the nominative by grammarians. They are used in their pure uses as standalone nouns, but are also used with prepositions with a variety of uses. We have no such oblique cases in English, although English nouns sometimes do function as adverbs and are oblique in that sense. There's a couple of ways in which we do that. I'll give you a couple of examples as we go through. At this point, case and form become more complicated. As stated, the nominative case, form one is what we're calling that, does not share its form with other cases. But form two has more than one case function associated with it. The form is often called the genitive, that's in the five case system, or the genitive ablative in the eight case system. However, nouns in the second form are used in a variety of ways which do not fit comfortably under either the genitive or ablative designation. This will become more clear as we study through first-year Greek. Form 2. The most common cases associated with Form 2 are the genitive and ablative cases. Other uses of the form are often considered kinds of either the genitive or ablative cases, though the association is often tenuous. Sometimes it's very difficult to see. Often the genitive case acts much like the possessive case does in English. Grammarians consider it the case of description. The best way for now to translate a noun in the genitive case is to place the preposition of before it. Note that the article the also changes spelling. Example. First example, ha oikos tu kuriu, the house of the Lord, or the Lord's house. Notice the u ending on kurios. So kurios becomes kuriu, of the Lord. Tu kuriu, rather, of the Lord. Notice the ha becomes tu. Second example, ha huios tu anthropou, the son of the man, or the man's son, if it's possessive. That would be an example of the genitive case used in the possessive sense. It's not always used that way, but it's very convenient to translate it in its rough translation using the word of. However, that form, the same form, can be in the ablative case. The ablative case has no direct English equivalent. In addition, it shares a set of endings with a genitive case, and only context can tell the difference. When I was a first-year student, I tried them both every time until I got used to it. The idea of the ablative case is separation. The best way for now to translate an ablative case noun is to place the preposition from before it. Sometimes this case will follow one of the Greek prepositions meaning from. Often, nouns in the ablative case function as adverbs. Adverbial nouns are quite common in English, such as when we say, I'm going home. That's the first example. The word home, the noun home, tells where I am going and is therefore adverbial. It's used as an adverb, and when I diagram that, I diagram it underneath the verb, not as the direct object. It's not the object. It is telling where I'm going. Another example, ha kurios legai tu oiku. The Lord, ha kurios, speaks of or from the house. Now, you might think he's speaking about the house, but in Greek, of the house does not normally mean about the house. That's an English idiom, and I've had students ask me that. Actually, when you see it like this, when he speaks, he's speaking from the house. Now, this is a relatively unusual use of the word tu kurio, the words tu kurio, but this kind of thing does occur in the New Testament. The words tu oiku, in this case, I said kurio, tu oiku, are informed to, but are clearly not genitive. They indicate the place from which the Lord is speaking. The ablative noun is not functioning like a noun usually does. It is actually an adverb. So nouns function like adjectives, the man's son, in the possessive sense, possessive adjective, or they can be adverbial, like the ablative is almost always, in fact, it's always adverbial when it occurs. Now I must point out at this place, at this time, that the pure ablative is not as common as the pure genitive. The most common oblique case in the New Testament is the pure genitive. It's used in a lot of ways, and we'll be examining them as we go through. Form 3 has three cases most commonly associated with it: the dative, the locative, and the instrumental. Sometimes it's called the dative, locative, instrumental case, but those are three cases. They're not one case. So it's one form with three cases. Again, nouns in the second form are used in a variety of ways which do not fit comfortably in the dative, locative, and instrumental designation. Third form. The dative case, like the ablative, has no direct English equivalents. The dative noun indicates the interest to or for whom the verb action is done, and therefore functions like the ablative as an adverb. Sometimes it is like an indirect object in English, but there are several other uses. The best way to translate a dative case noun is to place either the prepositions to or for before it. Context will determine which preposition will be used, though to is the most common. Example, ha huios, the son, legai, is speaking or speaks, to anthropo, to the man. Another example, ha anthropos, the man, legai, is speaking, tois kurios, the man is speaking for the Lord. Tois is the form 3 dative, but here it is for the benefit of. It's sometimes called a dative of advantage or a dative of benefit. For the Lord, as though the Lord were speaking. The locative case is the case of location. It shares a set of endings with the dative. So you can't tell by looking at the word. You have to figure it out from the context. The best way to translate a noun in the locative case is to place the preposition in before it. Sometimes this case follows the Greek preposition en, but it can mean in without the preposition. It is also adverbial. Example, ha kurios didaskai to hiero. The Lord is teaching in the temple. To hiero tells where he is teaching. The instrumental case is the case of means, instrumentality, or agency. We'll talk about those each individually as we go further. The best way to translate the instrumental case is by placing the preposition by, prepositions by, with, or the compound preposition by means of before it. It is another adverbial case function for a noun. Example, ha angelos legai logois. The messenger is speaking with words. That would be a case of an instrumental because the messenger is using an instrument, words, to express himself. When the student sees a noun with dative, locative, instrumental set of endings, he must observe the context to determine whether the noun is dative, locative, or instrumental. However, this is not as difficult as it may seem. Context will determine the difference. Oftentimes, it's the verb itself that determines the difference. Some verbs simply can't take one case but could take another one. Also, oftentimes, prepositions precede such oblique case nouns. We'll study the prepositions in a subsequent lesson. Form 4 is generally called the accusative. It's the Greek equivalent of the objective case in English. Now, I don't know if you've been paying close attention, but in English, with prepositions, every noun that acts as an object of the preposition is one case. It's called the objective case. This is not true in Greek. The accusative can be the object of a preposition, but so can be the genitive, the ablative, the dative, the locative, and it's the instrumental. All can be objects of prepositions. And we'll discuss that when we get to prepositions and show you why that is true. The accusative case is almost always used as the direct object, although there are a few times when the direct object is in a different form. The accusative case, they're still accusative, but they're not in form 4. Also, it can follow prepositions, and it is adverbial like the other case, oblique cases. Some grammarians call the accusative case the case of limitation. As a direct object form, it limits the activity of an action verb. Now, we've got to be careful about that because, in one sense, all the oblique cases, all their functions, show limitation in some way or description. So, this only really relates to the direct object. As a direct object, the noun is translated like the nominative case form. You don't put a preposition in front of it. In the following example, the student will find the plural forms of nouns. This is for demonstration purposes only. We will learn the endings to the nouns in the next section dealing with noun forms. Hoi apostoloi didaskousi tous doulos. This is translated the apostles teach or are teaching. I think I translated our teaching here, yes. The slaves, which I've put in the plural form here. So, notice the word slaves, that's in the accusative plural form. You don't say, you don't place a preposition in front of it when it's the direct object. I make a note on the Greek article here. In the above examples, the various forms of the words are used. Since the article the is an adjective, it must agree in form with the noun which it modifies. The writers of the New Testament are 100% consistent in using these forms. All the forms will be presented in detail later. For the time being, simply note them and pass on. Here's an example. And here I've underlined the articles in Greek and in English. Hoi apostoloi didaskousi ton doulon. The apostles are teaching the slave. The articles change spelling depending on the case form, that is the form 1, 2, 3, or 4 in which they modify. Form 5. This is a rare form actually in the New Testament, but it does occur. Form 5, used as a vocative, is somewhat strange. The vocative case is the case of direct address. So when you call someone by name, for instance. It is sometimes identical to the nominative, especially in the plural. In fact, almost always in the plural. But other times it has a distinct form. Some believe it is actually a nominative, but it does have a distinct use and is best thought of as a separate case. We will observe those distinct forms as they occur. Example, Satana, Satan, in the as a direct object, a direct address. Hupage, apiso mu. Satan, go behind me. You go behind me, because hupage is second person singular, you form, because of the ending. It's from the verb hupago, I go. Note that the actual subject of the imperative sentence is the understood noun you. This is in the imperative form. The imperative normally leaves out the subject pronoun you in both English and Greek. Satan, Satana, since he is being addressed, is in the evocative case no matter its spelling. Whether it changes spelling or not from the nominative, it is still in the vocative if the person is being addressed. The second declension, masculine, case forms. The following chart lists all the inflectional forms for the masculine word logos with a common translation. It is evident that some words, because of their meaning, do not fit certain case functions very well. For instance, certain words will not fit the idea of agency very well, so one might never expect to see a particular word, that particular word, in the instrumental case. Here are the forms, the five forms I've given you in the left-hand column for the Greek word logos. I'm going to read the Greek word, and I'm going to go back and read it again with the translation. First, I'm going to read the Greek word logos, logu, logo, logon, lage. Now with the translation, logos, word, logu, of word or from word, logo, to word, in word or by word, logon, word. Notice the translation for the nominative, for the form 1 and the form 4, the accusative form, are the same. Now the Greek form for the plural words, logoi, logon, logois, logus, logoi. Translation, logoi, words, that's form 1. Logon, over from words, that's form 2. Third form, logois, to, in, or by words, logus, words, and then logoi is simply not used. This is what I mean. Some forms, for instance, logos, the word, is not a personal noun, so you would never find it in form 5. Some words simply cannot be used that way. In fact, most words. The word anthropos, however, man, can be used in form 5. In fact, it is used in form 5, O man, in that sense. When you're addressing somebody, you're just calling him man. We even do that in English. Hey, man, we say. Well, that's in the vocative case. Below is the simplified form of the same table. Again, forms 1, 2, 3, and 4. The form 1 is nominative. Form 2 are generally genitive or ablative. Form 3, dative, locative, instrumental. Form 4, accusative. And I haven't written form 5 because it's not used with this word. In fact, I probably won't write it. I don't write it in most of these charts. I will read both columns. Singular first. Logos, logu, logo, logon. The plural, logoi, logon, logois, logus. I recommend that you do this with all the words, the masculine words, in the vocabulary list. It's good practice. Write them. Speak them out loud as often as you can. These endings will be used for all second declension masculine nouns. Memorize the chart below. And this is simply the endings themselves. It's best to learn them and then just apply them to the nouns. So I will read the endings by themselves. Os, u, o, on, singular, plural, or oi, on, ois, us. Now the second declension neuter case forms. The second declension contains neuter nouns whose endings are quite similar to the masculine set, but vary in certain particulars. Observe the following forms for the neuter nouns, doron and hieron. I've given you both. These are the only two neuter nouns in this lesson. Doron, doru, doro, doron. The plural are dora, doron, dorois, dora. With hieron, I will read them first in the singular column. Hieron, hieru, hiero, hieron, plural. Hiera, hieron, hierois, hiera. You'll notice that in both cases, in the singular column, the masculine singular column, the neuter singular column, the form 1 and the form 4 are identical. The endings are the same as with the plurals. They're both the same ending. Likewise with hieron. So the only ones that are identical to the masculine are the form 2 and form 3, the genitive and ablative form, and the dative and locative and instrumental forms. So they're pretty simple. It's just a matter of remembering they're neuter. I gave you below a chart that has simply the neuter noun forms, and I recommend that you memorize this chart. On, oo, o, on, ah, on, ois, ah. Now, throughout this second declension, we've come to the third form in the singular, and I hope you have noticed the little, it looks like a subcritical mark under the omega for form 3. That's actually an iota subscript. That's the letter iota, but it's written beneath the word, the letter. This happens in several cases with long vowels where the subscript, the iota has become subscript. Probably this occurred in the language because iotas that come at the end of syllables or at the end of words, like in the case of the ending, are not pronounced. But they wanted to maintain them so as to tell what the form was. So they put them underneath. Iota subscript, they're called. Word order. Word order in English first. This is something that we grow up with and we don't even stop to think about. By and large, one determines English word order by the use of the word in a sentence. Almost always, the subject is first, followed by the verb, followed by either the direct object or the subject complement if the sentence has one of them. Other parts of the sentence, such as prepositional phrases, may interrupt these basal parts, but rarely do they occur out of the normal order. The exception in English is the question, which is often begun with a verb or helping verb. Indeed, if we change the order, the meaning of the sentence changes. Note the following examples. The subjects are underlined and the objects are overlined. Example 1. The car hit the dog. It's obvious that car, the word car refers to that which hit the dog. It's the subject and the word dog is the object. Notice the next example. The dog hit the car. I don't know why a dog would do such a thing, but there's the sentence. Obviously, the dog is now the subject and the word car is the object. But there's no change in spelling. The only way you know the difference is because of the word order. So English is bound to word order. Look at the next example. These are questions. Did the car hit the dog? Did the dog hit the car? In both cases, there has to be an order for the subject and object, unless something very strange is going on. This is what you will see. There is such a thing as poetic license in which these things get switched around, but that's simply for stylized speech. Normally, we simply always must keep them in the right order. So the change of word order in English is very important. It changes the meaning of a certain sentence. This is not true in Greek. Word order in Greek is totally different. Since Greek has inflectional endings for nouns, the word order can be used for emphasis rather than meaning. In other words, one does not need to rely on the word order to determine the subject and object of a sentence. Note the following examples. Example 1 there, ha apostolos blepai ton huion. The apostle sees or is seeing the son. Either translation is acceptable at this point. But notice the next example. Ton huion blepai ha apostolos. It's also to be translated, the apostle sees the sun. English requires that word order, but Greek does not. Ton huion is the object of the sentence, even if it's first, because it's in the accusative form. Blepai is the verb. Ha apostolos is the subject. So the two Greek examples mean exactly the same thing. The first example, the normal word order, is followed, and this is normal in Greek as well, but the important thing is that the word apostolos is in the nominative case, and the word huion is in the accusative case, and the endings are used to help us determine that. The second example turns the word order around, but huion is still in the accusative case and is still the object, while apostolos is still in the nominative case and is still the subject. Both sentences must be translated exactly the same way. The apostle sees the sun, because in English, the subject must come first. In fact, any number of word orders could be used in Greek, and by the way, they are. It becomes very confusing if you don't pay attention to the endings. But the meaning would be the same, no matter what the order. Here's an example. Ton huion ha apostolos blepai. You can put the verb at the end. And it still means the apostle sees the sun. Or blepai ton huion ha apostolos. Blepai, the verb, is first, but the subject is still ha apostolos, and the object is still ton huion. So it has to be translated, the apostle sees the sun. English requires that word order. Since Greek is flexible, writers and speakers could arrange words in order to emphasize something. If the subject occurs first in the sentence, it is because in the mind of, if the object occurs first in the sentence, it is because in the mind of the writer, the object is what he particularly wants or wanted to emphasize. Likewise, if the verb occurs first, it is because that verb is receiving emphasis. Also, when you see a word at the end of a sentence that you would expect to see elsewhere, it is receiving a secondary emphasis. So there you have the peculiarity of an inflected language. German does this. Spanish does it to a certain extent, which is more inflected than English, and so on and so forth. English is one of those languages, and there are some, that maintain a strict word order. Greek is not. But when we diagram, and that's what I want to introduce to you now, we diagram according to English word order. Because word order is variable in Greek as well as for other purposes, we have developed a method of diagramming to help the student understand the word relationships. In an English sense, I mean. By using this method, we can put the Greek words in the normal or nearly normal word order in English for translation purposes. That is, within a particular clause. That is not true between clauses, and we'll see that later on. Notice the example. Apostolos, blepai, and huion are all on the basal line. We call that line the basal line. You'll see that later. Subject is always separated from the verb by a vertical line that goes through the horizontal line, the basal line. We call that a predicate line. Blepai is followed by the object huion in the diagram. No matter where it occurs in the sentence as you read it in the text, it occurs in the normal place for the English object, following an object line that stops at the basal line. Beneath, we write the adjectives, in this case, two articles, the apostle, the son. Now, one thing that I always do, and I try to do this every time when I give you examples, notice that the word blepai has a superscript 1. I'm footnoting the word blepai, and underneath it, I'm giving all the regular information about that verb. I'm going to do this for the first time. We'll be learning this later, so you don't have to remember this, but I just want you to know that this is what I always do. First of all, I give the tense. In this case, blepai is present tense. And then I tell whether I give its transitiveness. Here it's transitive active. We'll be talking about that more. I give its mood. Here it's indicative. Then I give its person. In this case, it's third person. Then I give the number. It's singular. And then I tell its basic vocabulary form. That's the way it would be looked up in a lexicon or a dictionary. Blepo. So I always parse all the verbs every time I diagram. Now, here's something that's peculiar in Greek. If the subject is not supplied, that is, if it's in the ending of the verb, and sometimes the subject are, subjects are, then in those cases, you have to supply the subject in English. And so I usually do that, or I always do that when I'm diagramming. And you usually must do that when you're translating. So look at the example. Blepi ton huion. He sees the sun, or she, if it's a contextually, you can tell it's a woman doing the seeing, or it could be a dog sees the sun. So we supply he, she, or it as the subject when there is no subject written. And so I explained that below there. Notice the diagram. He, blepi, sees the sun. I put the word he in. Of course, I would use she or it if it's referring to a woman. And then I parse it again, present, transitive active, indicative, third person singular from blepo. I do that every time. Now, pay particular attention to the endings of the verbs. If there is no nominative case noun or pronoun stated, the student must supply it. The following sentence must be translated, you see the sun. The you must also be included in the diagram. So look at the next sentence. It's blepi ton huion is the actual sentence. You, blepi, is the you form, you singular form for the second person. You see ton huion, the sun. And so I put you in the diagram as well. So there you have the normal function of diagramming in the Greek. And we'll be looking at this more and more. And by the way, notice I parsed the verb present, transitive, active, indicative, second person, singular, from blepo. Section 4.5, the Greek article. In lesson 2, we learned the three Greek articles as they appear in form 1. The masculine is ha, the feminine is he, the neuter is ta. Articles are adjectives and must also agree with their nouns in three ways: gender, number, and case. Now, in English, this is no problem, because we only have one spelling for any adjective, including the article. The, that's it. The is always the, no matter what gender, number, or case it is. However, in Greek, and since Greek is a fully inflected language, in Greek, the spelling of the article changes depending on the function of the noun that it modifies. So, the Greek is fully inflected in its article. The spelling changes depending on the function of the noun with the article. So I've given you all the forms of the article for the four forms. Here is the chart below. Form 1, ha. Form 2, to. Form 3, to. Form 4, ton. And in the plural, hoi, ton, tois, tous. Now, I've often been asked why the letter tau is added to forms 2, 3, and 4. And my answer is very simple. I don't know. It just is. Probably there was some linguistic reason for it because of the way it sounded or something that the language liked. One of the things about the articles is that they're derived from other words. So who knows exactly? This is the masculine set here, singular and plural. And I've given you the translations. The, of, from, the, as the genitive ablative, to, in, by, the, as the dative, locative, instrumental, and the, as the accusative. And it's true all the way through. The only way to translate any article is by the English word the. It's always translated the same way. Notice the articles for the neuter nouns. Ta, to, to, ta. Just like the neuter nouns, the form 1 and form 4 are identical. The plural is ta, ton, tois, ta. So all the way through, you'll see a consistency with these. I never did really bother to memorize them. You see them so much that you can't help but memorize them as you go through. So I say here, it's not necessary to memorize the article chart. Observe the article with the noun and place correct preposition before the translation the, as indicated by the ending of the noun. Not the form of the article. The reason is that the noun, not the adjective that modifies it, carries the idea of case. These adjectives do not carry the idea of case. These are not case forms. They are in agreement forms for the noun. Exercises. Now, there are several exercises here, and I've given them to you so that you can perform them, do them. I'm not going to go through these. They're self-explanatory. Simply fill in the charts. I do want to talk for a moment about the translation and diagramming. You can diagram or not diagram. That's not required in the course, and I don't give grades for diagramming when I'm teaching it in a graded form. But I will tell you that it is a good thing to start practicing what you can. If you can't diagram everything, I understand, but it's good to do it. It's not required, however, so I give you some to attempt if you would like to. It's not usually all of them, but in some cases it is if there's only a few. In this case, the ones that I require request that you diagram are 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, and 8. You can do all of them if you want to. I'm going to produce a translation and diagramming key. I say in the notes here, it is available. It's not yet. It will be. It's going to take some time to finish that. But if you have any questions about them, you can contact me. I'm going to read through the 17 sentences for translation. I'm not going to translate them for you. I'm going to read them through. 1. Ha apostolos legai tan namon. 2. Ha adelphos graphai tan logon. 3. Ha anthropos anagnoskai tan namon. 4. Lambano dora carpu kai artu. 5. Hoi anthropoi thelusi blepine tus dulus to oiko. 6. Ekamen tan karpon. 7. Ha anthropos gnoskai tan namon. 8. Ha doulos ferai doron. 9. Hoi apostoloi ferusin artus to hiero. 10. Blepamen tus oikus ton achlon. 11. Hoi huioi ton anthropon agusi tus dulus. 12. Graphamen lagus tois adelphois. 13. Hoi adelphoi akousi tus lagus tu angelou. Pardon me. 14. Ha angelos legai lagus thanatu tois anthropois kai tois huiois. 15. Hoi achloi blepusi tus lithus to hiero kai toi to oiko. 16. Hoi angeloi gnoskusi thanaton kai didaskusin anthropus lagois. 17. Blepo tan kurion to oiko. That concludes this lesson.